G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Madam White's ready to go. He loves Monday because he gets a chance to summarise 72 hours, effectively, of sport across the globe, and he's back again. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. I promised I would go to bed early on this Sunday night, or last Sunday night, last night, because, well, I too often I start the week poorly by not getting enough sleep. Yes. And it got the better of me, and I stayed up and watched the cricket. Not all of it, but I did watch a fair bit of it. And because it was an earlier start than normal, because it was a day game at the Rose Bowl between Australia and England, so I watched that. So I haven't had much sleep, but that's okay. I want to get straight into it. Why?
Hang on.
Why?
Hang on, hold. We've got to introduce our other team member before we start asking why questions.
Needs to be asked.
Now, Adam Ramanauskas has joined us, Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars on a Monday. Great to have him part of the team throughout however long we last on this airwaves. Good morning, Rama.
Good morning. Yes, I probably should have stayed up to watch the cricket, but... Why? I just laid in bed and staring at the roof last night. Didn't get a lot of sleep last night, so...
What happened?
I was checking the... Well, you know, when you just have one of those nights where you just don't sleep a lot. So, I was checking the phone, checking the scores of the cricket, and got up a bit earlier this morning, had a shower, unlike some other people that we know in our team.
Good morning, Jerry.
But it was a lovely day for Father's Day, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers for yesterday. In this time, the kids just got the old tracksuit pants and socks, because basically you're not wearing much more than that. Maybe every now and then you might put a jumper and a T-shirt on, but it's mainly just tracksuit pants and socks.
Yep, I've got no problem with that. Congratulations. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there set for yesterday. It hasn't been a lot to look forward to in recent times, but at least there was hopefully a little bit of love shown around the nation, certainly Victoria yesterday, to all the dads out there. So I hope you had a great day. Whitey, what are you on about with your why?
Well, you know what I'm going to ask you. You got no hair on your head.
Well, I haven't had hair
on
my head
for
your
face. Yeah, but you've got, like a little bit. You've had a, you look like Bill Hanna.
Milan's a very handsome man. Very handsome man.
That's a name from the past, isn't it? It shows how old I am. Explain yourself, because there's no beard again. You've done this once before in the last year or so.
Yes.
You look significantly better. I hope this is to stay.
Oh, I doubt it. But it was just... it's a little opportunity, isn't it? Because it grows back. The beautiful thing about the beard...
Gives you something to do.
It gives me something to do. Well, there is a reason, and it's a Father's Day reason, actually. Abby promised me, my beautiful daughter, she didn't promise me. She said, as part of my Father's Day present, Dad, I'm going to give you a facial. So I thought, well, if I want to enjoy the whole experience here, I might as well take the beard off, because it grows back, white. This is the beautiful thing about hair, except, of course, on top of my head. It grows back. So I thought, well, I'll just take it off. So I got the full experience last night as I was lying down with the oils and the lotions and the creams and the hot towel. She put a hot towel on to start proceedings.
Right.
She's all over it.
Did she promise it like a spa experience? A white uniform, that sort of thing they wear?
No lab coat situation from the Ebonator. But there was a half an hour of just bliss, just sitting there with a little bit of soft music in the background. She put on a little soundtrack. And then started the lotions and the creams and the oils. My goodness.
Well, she needed something to do to get ready for the Formula One race that was on a little bit later on, so she thought she'd fill in some time.
Well, it was an important precursor to the racing, as always. That was a very nice gesture from my baby girl.
Very good.
I thought, I'll take it off. I'll take it off and see how it goes. See how long it lasts. I don't think it's going to last too long, I must admit. Quite like the beard.
Maybe this time, rather than growing the full beard, just the mustache this time. Just a nice, real thick mustache.
William wants me to grow a mustache, just the mustache. And he wants to dye it blue. Which I'd be more than happy for him to do, because there's no reason to not dye it blue these days, is there?
No.
Haven't got anything anywhere to be.
Nope.
So that was the situation for the Bonds. I feel a bit like Uncle Fester, I must admit.
I didn't want to say anything, but you do look like him as well.
It must have been. It's a bit of Uncle Fester activity. But so it was a lovely gesture by my baby girl. I'm very happy about that. Had a nice day yesterday. How did your Father's Day go? Why do yours would have been very, very entertaining, I would have thought, considering the stories you give.
No, nothing exciting is going on in our house, I'll tell you right now. Absolutely nothing. It was a bit of a deflating day yesterday for obvious reasons, but probably inevitable at the same time. So I don't think there was anything that Dan Andrews said that surprised us too much. And now we've just got to get on with it, I guess. Not much else. As I keep saying to everyone in our family, we haven't really got an alternative. So there's no point wallowing in the frustration or the whatever. We've just got to get on with it. And so once we got over that, Hawthorn lost. So that was fantastic for the kids. That was just became a wonderful high-energy afternoon of real positivity. And then Essendon played. And so that was even better. So we had a terrific day.
Essendon played. Sorry, they've had some injuries.
Did they? Did Essendon play?
No. Did you know, Rama, yesterday that Essendon's season was on the line? They were playing for a potential spot in the finals.
Come on.
I thought it was a pre-season game.
They beat Geelong in the pre-season.
That's about where they belong, I reckon. We'll talk more after 7 about the football. Don't go too hard on the Bombers, because we don't have too many games to talk about, so I don't want to go too hard too early on the weekend's activities in the world of AFL football, the end of round 15, start of round 16.
You know what, just on what Whitey was saying, I didn't even watch Dan Andrews yesterday. I just waited till he finished, then just jumped onto Twitter and watched everybody just be outraged.
Oh, there was some heat. There was some heat yesterday for Premier Dan.
Yeah. All I want to know is when I could start playing golf. And I actually don't even know why I need to know that, because I actually stopped playing golf a couple of months ago because I was playing so badly. So I don't even really want to play again at the moment. But I did want to know when I could play golf. No, which is interesting. And I want to know when my cricket season is going to start. And I don't really know when that's going to start. Do you think it might start November? Mid-November?
No, I wouldn't be getting into the pre-season training situation for a little while, Whitey. I'd just put that on the burner.
That's not an issue.
I'd put that on the burner for a second.
Anyway.
And it was a bad start to the weekend because the early mail curse continued. And the victim here was off camo service off the SMS, was my horse all my life. It was the early mail curse. So had we had a trainer answer on Friday, I wouldn't have had to put my horse in there and cursed it. But that's what happened. So not a great situation for the ownership there of all my life. At the 1200 next time, remember.
Well, the WhatsApp banter was quite amusing on Friday night after I checked the results of the day and watched the replay. It was quite amusing, and you were in an emotional state on Friday night, it's fair to say.
Yeah, I was. But I think I'm happy. I think I know what's happened here, and we get out to 1200 next start, Raymond, and I think we'll be right. We just got blistering speed. The time of the race was unbelievable. Who would have thought a Donald Maiden on a Friday is going to produce that level of detail? It'll be a great form race, as they say, Rama.
Yes,
it'll
be
a great form race.
Form reference.
Hey, there's some drama in the world of sport. Novak Djokovic, right? And now he rolled on his shoulder not long ago, about 5 minutes ago, and then he got broken. His service was broken, and he's whacked the ball and hit a lineswoman. He's been defaulted out of the US Open. So he's lost his mind, effectively. He's been defaulted from the US Open after he hit a lineswoman in anger in the head and the neck with the tennis ball. She fell to the ground, pleaded his case for many minutes. So Ben Rothenberg's telling us on Twitter at the moment. He was undefeated in 2020 to this point. Wow. So Craig Gabriel's going to join us soon. So there's a fair bit of meat on that bone already. But good on him. Good on him for defaulting him. The rules are very clear, they reckon, that there is not much wiggle room. And Novak Djokovic, the number one seed, the raging hot favourite, is out of the US Open for being a dill. And I'm okay with it. I'm more than okay with that.
Just seen the replay of this half, and he's instantly gone over and apologised. But
so, a bit late.
Yeah, and it's hit her right in the throat. It's hit the Lions judge right in the throat. So you can see now he's talking to the umpire. He's got a smirk on his face because he knows what he's absolutely done wrong, and he is pleading his case, but it's gone and shook the hand and walked off the court.
Well, it doesn't do him any favours. He's had a PR battle in the last couple of months.
Yeah, you know, it's shocking.
This is going to be, yeah. Because usually they just, after your services broke, if you got the ball in your pocket, you hit it along the ground to the ball kid or the Lions person. But he's hit the ball with a little bit of ferocity, and it's, hit the Lions judge straight in the throat.
Wow, that is sensational news in all the wrong ways. Novak Djokovic out, defaulted from the US Open. So we'll have a chat to Craig Gabriel about that shortly.
Yeah, it's happened a few times. It's not something that hasn't happened before. Remember Denis Shapovalov or whatever his name is? In the Davis Cup, he actually hit the chair umpire. Tim Henman, it's happened to him before. So... that is massive, considering the build-up, as you said, Half. It's all been about Novak Djokovic the last few months in the world of tennis.
Yeah.
For him to be defaulted like that is extraordinary.
I'm looking can we just keep an eye on the Twitter of Nick Kyrgios, please?
Yes. I'll just throw one quick question.
Yeah.
Are you happy that he won't win the tournament now?
Yep.
Obviously,
I'm happy. Forget the goose.
I'm not that fussed. I don't overly dislike him. I don't love him, but I appreciate how good a tennis player he is.
I think this one
would have always been, you know, in that race to see who wins the most Grand Slams. This one's always going to have an asterisk next to it, you know, considering the fact that Nadal and Federer aren't playing. Although Federer is not playing because he's injured, I still think it's a bit of a bonus one. So the fact that he's not winning, it's not a bad thing.
It does mean that one of
Shapovalov,
Goffin, Zverev, Karina Busta, Koric, or Jordan Thompson will be the US Open finalist. One of those six players.
And I think that's going to be interesting to see.
About an hour.
Yeah, so he plays Borna Koric. So, and he'll be a chance to win that as well because he's coming off a marathon match, Koric. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, which one of those young guys can seize the opportunity. Hey, in the cricket last night, I did talk about how I watched it, Daniel.
Yes.
They got off to a very bad start, the Australians. They were 2 for 3. Warner was out for a duck and they put Alex Carey to 3 and he was out for 2. And then when Steve Smith ran himself out, it was 3 for 30. They did get to 7 for 157 in the end, which I actually thought was quite a competitive score because the pitch wasn't a great batting pitch. It was sort of doing a little bit, sort of popping a little bit off a length. Finch got 40, Stoinis 35, and Maxwell 26. Agar chipped in with 23 towards the end. But in reply, Joss Butler made it look very easy. It was like a road for him. He made 77 not out of 54 balls. One of the new stars in England cricket coming through is David Malan, as opposed to David. It's David Malan. He got 42. And in England, really, cruised to victory. So after winning on Friday night when Australia had that crazy collapse chasing, they're 2 down. Now, England's had a lot of cricket. Australia obviously hasn't. But they'd be disappointed the fact that they've been beaten in both of those matches, considering, particularly that first one, they're in such a strong position.
Right, well, that's 3-0. Well, got pantsed in the T20s across the weekend. We should have won the one on Friday night, shouldn't we? Was that the first one we should have won? We collapsed late?
Yeah.
We won for 1-2-4 or something?
Yeah, 39 off 36 with 9 wickets in hand, I think it was.
And we lost that game.
And lost that one. That was a bit of a setback. But I think, again, we talk about this a lot, about one-day cricket and T20 cricket, that you lose 2 recognised batsmen in a chase, and all of a sudden it can get out of hand very quickly. And in that chase, David Warner, who was the recognised batsman, got out. So the 2 fresh batsmen, and all of a sudden 39 of 36 with 9 wickets in hand became you know, 35 off about 28 with two fresh batsmen. I mean, that completely changes the context of the game. They should still have won it, mind you, but they found a way not to. They're trying Marcus Stoinis in the number five slot, which I think is interesting because it's been tried before unsuccessfully, and they're giving him another chance in that middle order. His success, obviously, last summer in the Big Bash came from opening the batting, but because they've got Finch and Warner at the top, they think that the only way Stoinis can play is in that middle order position, and they're giving him a chance through this tournament. I would have gone with Mitch Marsh ahead of Stoinis, but I guess this is the opportunity to try a few things because the T20 World Cup's been pushed back 12 months.
Oh, boy. So the one day starts. When do they start? They start.
There's still one more of these to, still one more of these to go. The short ones, and then they'll play the long ones.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was done. Oh, right, one more. And then the
maybe
long
it
ones.
Is.
No, you might be right. No, you're right. You're 100% right. You're 100% correct, as always, when it comes to the world of cricket. Spot on.
And also, just while we leave cricket, the confirmation at the IPL, that is starting on the 19th of September and then going through until the 10th of November. So they're playing in Dubai, Sharjah and Abu Dhabi. There is still some question marks because one particular team, the Chennai Super Kings, I think 10 or 11 of their squad tested positive to coronavirus. And it has got a few people nervous. There has been a couple of players that have pulled out. We might try and catch up with Dave Hussey during the week because he's an assistant coach at one of the teams just to get a feel for the environment in the build-up to it because it will start still a couple of weeks away or just over a week away just to see how just the environment, knowing that all those players did test positive because it is a unique situation. There's no question about that.
Yes, that is correct. A bit of feedback coming through from Derek Djokovic defaulting there at the US Open. If you just joined us, he's been defaulted for striking a line judge with a tennis ball after having his serve broken. So the number one seed, the world number one, has been defaulted from the US Open. She doesn't have to go to hospital for this. He tried to downplay the effects of hitting the lineswoman, saying she wasn't seriously injured. So that's acceptable to just whack them if they don't go to hospital, according to Novak. And then continue. You're going to choose a default in this situation. My career, Grand Slam, centre stage. She would have gotten up right away. So he's trying to justify and soften the stance here, man, Novak. That's not helping his PR battle.
Let's be honest here. He was knocking the ball away. You know, I've just had a look at it now. There was no maliciousness about this at all.
It doesn't matter.
He's been given two balls by... I know, but I'm just saying he's been given two balls by the... He's been given two balls by the ball kid to serve, and he's knocked the ball away that he didn't want. He's not looking at the lines person, like that's a complete accident. I'm not condoning it, but it's a complete accident. It's not been done in frustration. It's just been done in. No, I don't want that one. I'll hit that away.
No, but it's when he's lost his serve that he's hit the ball from mid court.
No, that can't be the one, Whitey.
You're looking at the wrong one, Whitey.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Yeah, you're looking at the wrong one. He's lost his serve.
What, so
he's hit the ball in the middle of the court.
I'm watching it now.
I just watched it myself on the actual TV.
It's not ideal. It's not ideal, but it's not like he's got the ball and he's smacked it at the back of the court.
I'm with half. The rule is very clear.
Yeah, the rule's clear. I'm not saying he should still be in the tournament, but it's a complete accident.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Let's get to a little bit of action in the world of cycling across the weekend. The Tour de France is underway at the moment. Phil Rockner is covering the tour for us on The Breakfast Club. He's back again. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. How are you?
Going very well, thank you. How much sleep did you get on the weekend watching Le Tour?
Bits and pieces. You know, the odd nap on the couch during this latter parts of the stages sometimes, but certainly everyone's covering this thing remote at the moment, and we're getting life in a moving hub or a moving bubble at the moment, and it's all having a rest tonight. But certainly the weekend showed us, boys, that we really have to keep paying attention when you're on the bike because things can blow up quickly.
Yeah, that's right. A rest night tonight, so we'll talk about that and who that might benefit a little bit later on, Phil. But speaking of sleep, is Richie Porte going to be getting any? Because didn't he have a baby on the weekend?
Yeah, and it's not. It's remote.
Remote baby.
In terms of the, I think it's the travelling bubble, et cetera, doesn't account for that kind of thing. So, yeah, they gave birth to kid number two and no doubt playing on his mind. I'm not sure he's in contention this year after what happened on the weekend, you know, losing time, et cetera. There's a lot of stress going on. And, you know, whether the race is going to start due to COVID, how it's tracking at the moment, but also the fact that, you know, when you're welcoming another child into your family, et cetera, there's a lot of things going on, a lot of moving parts in that man's world at the moment.
So he's 11 seconds off and you reckon he's out of the game?
Oh, he lost big chunks of time over the weekend. He's certainly... overall, he's in a little bit of trouble, I would have thought. 153 off the lead. The crosswinds, boys, take seven. As soon as those crosswinds hit, the race blows to pieces. If you're not in that top 30, you get dropped. And the chances of you coming back in a pro race when the bunch splinters like that are pretty minimal. So a lot of those boys on Saturday night got caught out, or Sunday, oh, Friday night, sorry, got caught out in the crosswinds, and the race just exploded. And there are teams who see the weather. Obviously, they know what's happening and they plan for this and they jump the rest of the bunch. So he was one of the ones who got caught out. Buck 53, it's a pretty big ask at this point in time to try and come back, given who's ahead of him at the moment.
Can you explain, Phil, to us exactly what that means about the crosswinds and how the field can splinter the way it does just because of the wind?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, everyone knows about riding into a headwind. Everyone just stops. You hide behind the bloke in front of you. In a crosswind, what happens, they form echelons, and you'll see them staggered across the road. They'll be sort of sitting right or left, depending on which side the wind's coming from, and it goes right across the road. After a while, there's just no road. You can't fit the right side of that person, so you form another echelon, and it might start breaking up. And so essentially what's happening is you just don't have a wheel to follow. And then once you don't have that, that's when the bunch splinters. And there are teams that know that. And they just go full gas. And they're talking about, you know, 50 k's an hour into a crosswind. As soon as you lose contact, you know, it's like you lose a wheel. Then you lose a bike link. Then you lose two bike links. And then all of a sudden you're exposed to the wind yourself. And it just becomes mission impossible because that bike length turns into, you know, 30, 40, 50 metres as it goes along. And then within a kilometre, you might be something like, you know, half a kilometre down with no way to come back up because the front echelon's moving so quickly. So it really is an art form. And you find that the Dutch teams, the Belgian teams, they tend to, because that's what how they race as juniors, they find it very, very easy to get through the wind, whereas some of the other countries find it a lot harder and their teams find it harder as well.
Phil, the other part that I found interesting over the weekend was, obviously we love having crowds there in some description, but there was a little bit of an issue with crowds not wearing masks, getting close to the riders, obviously going up those mountains, and a few of the teams have called out the spectators on that.
Yeah, it doesn't. One of the greatest parts of the Tour de France pre-COVID is watching a whole bunch of lunatics on a mountain just going crazy and, you know, seeing how they go. I mean, they all get involved and it's you know, traumatic as a rider because you've got to ride through it, but it's fun to watch as a spectator. Yeah, a lot of them without masks. The riders themselves have been calling out on social media to the spectators, you know, you guys need to put masks on. This is a hugely risky activity, guys. The rest day today, they're going to be testing everybody. Anyone, only two people in the team who test positive, that whole team gets sent home. That would mean that, you know, we lose entire team favourites, etc. There's a lot of money involved, obviously. There's TV rights. There's lots of things, again, moving around in this tour. And it only takes a couple of careless people to get to a position where the tour gets shut down. And everyone on the tour, and there's 650 people moving every single day, that gets really frightening for that group because what they're trying to do is obviously stay within the confines and of the bubble and within the boundaries of the bubble as well. So there's a lot of pressure on everybody to do the right thing, fans included. If you're going to be on the mountain, they want you just to, you know, do the right thing with the social distancing, or if you can't do that, put a mask on, etc. And yeah, you're right, there's been a lot of concern around that.
Craig Gabriel, sensation this morning. Novak Djokovic defaulted out of the US Open. Oh, boy. Craig, good morning.
Oh, goodness gracious. I'm still shaking. You know, when the discussion was going on at the net, My hands were sweating. I knew what was going to happen because that is the rules. And I just tweeted this point. I'm paraphrasing here, but you are responsible for your actions on the court.
So you should be.
Well, exactly. But even if it had just been a flick, he should, and it hit somebody, or it hit a Lions person, or whatever. He would have been. He needed to be defaulted. That's the rules, and we've seen it time and again. You know, it is a shock. It is obviously sad, very sad. You know, because of all that was surrounding this.
Mm.
But that's the way it is. You know, that is the rule. The right decision was made to default him.
Now, he was trying to, well, we believe Novak was trying to justify it somehow, that she's not going to hospital, so she'd be right. That doesn't matter, does it? It's any action that leads to that level of impact or that impact on a Lions person or ball person, that's you're straight out.
I'm just seeing pictures of him getting in the car and he's leaving, leaving the stadium. So that means there'll be no post-match media conference or anything like that. But, this is... It's shocking. I can't think of another word. I mean, absolutely mind-blowing on this whole situation. He was chasing a fourth U.S. Open title, his 18th career major. All that is insignificant, really, in the scheme of things. I certainly hope that the lady is fine. I mean, you could see the distress on her face, and obviously the shock as well, because that would have been a big factor in the whole thing also.
Mm.
But there's no doubt she was in pain because she was clutching her throat and groaning. You heard her yelp when the ball hit her. So, it's a terrible, terrible situation.
They were playing an interesting game where it's just like a game of keepies off, really, especially in the second quarter. I think they took 42 marks and kicked one goal. So they might be able to get away with it against us. I don't think the method itself is going to lend itself to kicking a lot of goals.
Ah, well, that's his comment. we'll focus on what we can do, and maybe they could too.
Some interesting feedback from the opposition coaches there in the Hawthorn and St Kilda clash yesterday. Alistair Clarkson pouring a bit of cold water on the hype around the Saints. And Brett Ratton, his former assistant, premiership assistant many times, has said, in your boot, Clarko. We'll worry about ourselves. Jimmy Bartel always focused on what was in front of him with the Cats, and he joins us again on a Monday morning. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Half. Morning, men. And he touched on it before, the round 15 and round 16. It felt like me, Hawthorn, played twice this round. it's just the way it's been merged into each other. They lost to the Crows. They were very kind to the Crows. He did Matthew Nix a favour to get him his first win on the board in round 15, and then to get beaten by the Saints. And at the moment this year, I think we'd all agree, Clarko's probably the best opening batsman in the world. he can deflect everything down the fine leg, and he's real, just done that again brilliantly.
Jeff Boycott areas probably, from our man Clarko.
Isn't he? He's Ian Redpath. Block, block, deflect, block, block, deflect. I'll get the 50, keep my spot in the side. But I think he's done it that many times this year that I think now people are just going, well, it's just Clarko going again. Because you think in that Adelaide game in round 15A, he went on about the draft.
Yep.
And then they got beaten, and now he's gone on about, well, St Kilda, that's not sustainable. The Saints did kick 80 points in a shortened game. You know, as everyone does, you had the 25% factor. It's a 100-point game. Not many sides kick 100 points these days. So
no.
I think their game plan is sustainable, and it's got them to where they are on the ladder. The important thing for the Saints, what I took it out, is you've got to double down on that game plan now. Don't try and mix and match and play slow. We saw when they got beaten against Melbourne, when they got held up and played slow, they're not the same side.
So they would have been much happier, the Saints, had the Bulldogs lost last night. Now they didn't, so that keeps them into the hunt. But it was a super important win. They've got... Who have they got coming home? They've got West Coast and the Giants, I think, the Saints, coming home. So that's an interesting challenge for them. They're really going to have to earn their spot in the finals, which you should when you're a team that's emerging. So they're going to have to earn it. But you're talking about their style, their system and style, which is sustainable, you think. And is it finals sustainable, Jim, from your experience?
Well, Whether it is or it isn't, you know, they can't slow down now. So that's the point I'm making. Yep. So, like, they're a couple of games out from finals, you're better off doubling down now and probably overemphasising it to be a point of difference. Now, everyone's a copycat sort of industry. You know, the way they play footy, you know, when before West Coast won a premiership, people would have gone, well, the way they played, it's got, you know, chinks in the armour. The way Richmond played, it's got chinks in the armour. You can't surely just handball forward and rush onto it. But what both those sides did was they completely committed to it. You clearly knew when you went to, you know, Richmond and West Coast what they were trying to achieve. Now, I think it's important for the Saints. That's all I'm saying is don't try and slow down and possess the footy to protect yourself.
So it's 14 points in the end, I think it was, for St Kilda, Rama, in their clash with the Hawks yesterday, 11-14 to 9-12. So both teams inaccurate. And at one stage, it was 6-12, the Saints. They've really kicked themselves in a position where they might cough it up should things go awry, but they're able to straighten up late and control the game and get some of those over-the-back goals. Rama?
I like what St Kilda did yesterday. Obviously, they had players out that from their... that would be in their starting 18. So they had to just find a way. Had to find a way to win, and they were able to do that. They, as Jim said, they slowed the game down to an absolute crawl at times, but it showed another way. It showed they can actually do that now, and albeit, okay, Hawthorn aren't going that well this year, but they're still obviously a very well-coached team, and Clarko couldn't get around that. So I don't have any issue at all. They had to find a way. They kept themselves in the eight by a game. So all credit to St Kilda and Brett Ratten for mine.
I was really disappointed in Alistair Clarkson's comments. I think he's better than that. I think that he showed no respect for the way that St Kilda played. In the first quarter, it was 4-4 to 5-1. So Hawthorn kicked 5 goals in the first quarter. And what St Kilda was able to do was take away Hawthorn's momentum with the way it played. Now, to me, that is a sign of St Kilda getting better and maturing as a football team, that they can go more than just one way. And what they then did after that is that they rebalanced and they've kicked 6 goals, 6 after half time, to Hawthorn's 4-7 or whatever it was. So while the second quarter was hard to watch, they did it for a reason. And while as a sort of a neutral sort of entertainment point of view sitting on the couch, it was frustrating to see that second quarter play out the way it did. But they didn't then get lost in that. After half time, they were again able to change again enough to be able to find a way to win that game. So I think St Kilda should be given all credit for that. And considering the way that Alistair Clarkson's coached his teams, when a lot of it is around keepings off, I just thought that was a disrespectful comment.
Yeah, the thing I noticed a bit differently from what they did against the Demons, now you call it where the ground was or the conditions, whatever it may be, is they didn't get bogged, though, in their back 50.
Yes,
so
right.
They still possess the footy, and this is what I'm saying. They're still going to move the game forward. I talk about this a lot with some sides.
Yep.
They're one in particular that they've got to, even if you are playing this kick-catch game, you still have to move the ball down because I feel when the Saints get bogged down, then they're a completely different side. That's why I'm saying they've almost got it in their mind, overemphasise moving the game forward. Now, you can do that slowly, but you can also do it with really quickly, which they can be really good at as well.
And just to explain that a little bit further, what Jim's talking about there, teams, when they slow the game down, they kick the ball backwards and backwards and backwards. They end up back in their back pocket. Then they have to kick the ball down the line and only just gets outside their defensive 50. So usually it's then a restart in an attacking position for the opposition straight away. But if you're able to move the game forward and get a stoppage then down the line in your forward half of the ground, that's moving the game forward.
And I will say as well, to sort of saying before about I think St Kilda can take a lot out of that, they still have a lot of improving required to do what they need to do to make the finals. I mean, they're a little vulnerable there in that last quarter. I mean, Hawthorn missed a lot of opportunities. Yeah, I am.
Emotional.
I was emotional as my kids yesterday. But, you know, there was a situation where Hawthorn missed a lot of opportunities that they should have taken to get a lot closer. But St Kilda still found a way. And I think that has to be celebrated.
So a question to everybody here. Did anybody have St Kilda in their final eight to start the season?
Probably not. I can't remember.
Whatever they do now, Jim, I think they've made some giant leaps in this season in improvement.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the good thing for them is they've gone and got both. I had them. I couldn't decide whether in the eight or not, just because there's so many players they brought in. And normally, you normally see when you bring in that amount of players to that many key areas of the ground, that it normally takes you a year for everyone sort of to fall and settle into their role. We're still seeing a little bit from Brad Hill, but Dougal Howard, you know, this year has just settled in where you haven't really noticed him, which is great because that's what you want from your key back. He doesn't look out of sorts. Zach Jones has been good. Obviously, Paddy Wright has had some really good games now, that combination. But the other factor too is they've got improvement from within, like Jack Steele, Rowan Marshall, you know, Wilkie, Ben Long. I don't think we've all realised how tough Ben Long is across half-back. Caulfield's gotten better. So they've had both. They've been really good, you know, in your trade free agency, bringing all the players that they targeted. Butler, of course, didn't mean to leave him out. But the improvement from within has been really good as well.
They were good. They were good. The Saints, and they did enough, but I thought they were actually okay, considering what was on the line and what was out there and the way that Hawthorn played. Hawthorn were actually much better. In the first, particularly early, Jim, with our 3-1, or 3-0 up, I think they were at one stage. So they got out to a really big start, which, as always, makes you a bit nervous when you're the team that's expected to win. For the Saints, I reckon they showed a pretty good maturity yesterday.
Yeah, and can I ask you a question, Daniel? You're the coach amongst us. If an opposition side takes 101 uncontested marks, that's sort of a pattern throughout a game. Wouldn't you sort of just put the thing on the phone and go, you know what they're trying to do? They're going to try and possess the footy. We can be a little bit more aggressive in our defence.
Yeah.
Like, surely you can see that pattern unfolding in a game.
Well, there's a couple of teams that applied to yesterday. The poor old Bombers copped the wrath of the Cats doing that as well with the uncontested marks, which we'll talk about. But absolutely right, Jim, absolutely right. They're trying to close down, open up space and own the footy. Close it down. Push up.
That's all. Add the 25% factor on that. If you imagine a full-length game, look, we're on track for, you know, 10,000 marks in a game.
Yeah. That's a lot of marks, Jim. That is a lot of marks. Yeah, Saints are a game inside the eight with two to go, so they've given themselves every chance.
So if they'd lost that game, I don't think they could have made it. They've got two left. They've got West Coast and the Giants. They're on 36 points. And with the Bulldogs beating the Eagles, that was one the Saints really didn't want to happen, because the Bulldogs have got Hawthorn and Fremantle in their last two, and they're one game behind. The Giants are also on 32 points with Melbourne and St Kilda to come. Collingwood on 34 points with Gold Coast and Port Adelaide to come. And then Melbourne, they're the ones that, of that grouping, trying to make the eight. They've still got the three games to go with Fremantle tonight and then GWS and Essendon. So really, it's a complete raffle who gets those final two spots.
Yeah, and just remember the Giants are like Melbourne. They've got the extra game because remember the Giants had the bye because of that whole Western Australia parking over there for a week. So they got the crowbars coming up. So
you'd think that the Giants are going to make it.
Maybe. Mm. Adelaide are in form. Maybe. We know that. Adelaide are in form. We know that. They're a hot team at the moment.
They're on their biggest winning streak for the year, Adelaide.
They are, Jim. It's very important to remember that stuff. I'll tell you who's not, Jim. The Bombers are not on the biggest winning streak for the year. They got absolutely mauled by your Cats yesterday. It was one of the most powerful performances I've seen from a team all year. We've talked about the Cats' ability to really put the foot on the throat this season. They can control a game and just ease back when they want to. But when they want to go and really do some damage, they can do it. And with 6-1 in the first quarter and then 12-2 at half time, it was curtains for the poor old Bombers. How'd they do it, Jim?
Everywhere. Pick an area where they didn't do it. On field, match committee, you name it, matchups. I just want to know what the excuses are this week, Rammer, for the Bombers.
Michael Hurley. Zero.
Michael Hurley on Tom Hawkins. That's an interesting matchup. Yeah, you got Cale Hooker, who's probably a bigger bodied player. At least it gives you a chance down there. But I've been saying, I've been telling you, the Cats are the real deal. They've got depth everywhere. They've started to work out, I guess, their biggest weaknesses are not as glaring as they were in previous years running the finals. The younger group is at 30 to 50 games, and they've got finals experience. And they've got players who are in career best form. You know, Menegola, Guthrie, these sort of guys as well. So they're a red-hot side with confidence who, from the outset, have embraced hub life and just seem to almost be excited by it.
I was hoping the bye might have got the Cats half and Jim and Whitey. But clearly it had the reverse effect on Essendon. Have a way of running teams that are and players that are not going well. Now, Geelong haven't gone well off a bye for how many years, Jim?
15.
No, we played 2 weeks for the bye.
Right. So Essendon, as expected, they break that curse for Geelong with the way they started. Look, what the standout for me is when your season's on the line and that's what you serve up, that's really disappointing for a football club. And Essendon's season was on the line. There was still a chance to play finals football. 12-2 at halftime, and it's all over. They didn't look like it. They absolutely didn't look like it. Geelong were left to do whatever they liked. Essendon at times really just, they looked like witches' hats. The way Geelong were able to move the ball, the way they went into, you know, Essendon have been this fold-back team this year, but the amount of times that Geelong went into an open forward line was simply amazing. So the Bombers weren't up for the fight and they copped their right whack yesterday.
Yeah, and sorry, Whitey, just before you go, you're just using the stats is, you normally try and find something if you lose, like, oh, what do we win an area? You go through them. The only area that Essendon won was they kicked more points than Geelong.
Hang on, so they won the inaccuracy. Tackles inside forward 50. They had 11 to 7 tackles inside forward 50. They were dominant there.
No, yeah, they might have tackled themselves on a couple of them.
Essendon had one more. They won one more stat.
Which one?
What's that?
They had more interchanges than Geelong.
Oh, my apologies, Rammer. I have to reverse that back. They wanted everyone to have an experience of getting belted.
Nice work, Rammer. Nice work.
So Rammer, let's dig down a little bit deeper on this with Essendon.
Into the Cats.
Because they are prone to do this. Last year against the Western Bulldogs late in the season, they gave up about 28 goals in a row. Where they were uncompetitive. Now they've put in that sort of similar sort of performance yesterday, as you said, with the season on the line, because it looked like they'd checked out. Their season, they just checked out on their season. However, their season was still alive. So what does that say to that playing group that sort of performance is still happening or has the potential to still happen?
Well, probably says to me that they lack resilience as a squad. They lack a little bit of fight and probably lack a little bit of passion with the way they perform. So I think we can go as deep as we want into this, Whitey, but the reality is they're just not good enough at the moment.
I think that's a really important comment. Yeah, right?
And you look at for the last, you can go all the way back to 2012. They've been around this part of the ladder for that long, and we're talking 8 years now. They've been sort of 7th to 12th, and they're
worst
and
place
they're
to get stuck.
What? That's right. And what's happened too, Whitey, is their percentage is a real indicator.
Absolutely,
percentage is a real indicator for the team. And if you look at Essendon's percentage right now, it's 82.9, and they're sitting in 11th spot. So when they win, it's a close win. When they lose, they get slaughtered. And yesterday was simply that. So it's difficult when you watch the Bombers at the moment because you simply don't know what's going to turn up with regard to effort. And it's hard to say. I'd never, ever question any AFL footballer's effort out on a field or want to play. But I don't know, as an Essendon supporter, what they're going to turn up with. And that's a hard one.
But this is my point, Rammer, is that they know that internally and they haven't been able to fix it. They want to be known as a team that can be trusted and they can't fix it. Now, Ben Rutten has essentially had the keys to the car this year. Blake Carousel, obviously new to the team, new to the club this year. But they haven't been able to fix what is a significant deeper problem than just game style, because we know that they've had injuries, that's been well documented, but that doesn't excuse a lack of effort, which was the case yesterday.
No, but it's a system issue too, and Joe Watson picked this up beautifully yesterday in the coverage, Jim. I'm not sure if you're watching or not, but he was talking about, I think it was half-time or leading into half-time, 12 goals to 2 down, and he's talking about them folding back into defence to try and save the game and try and attack from your defensive half. It doesn't work. It's been proven not to work, especially for the Bombers in the last 8 years, Rammer. So it's a system issue as well. Whether or not they're trapped between two worlds at the moment, the old and the new, I don't know. But it's more than just effort. It's system as well. They're all over the shop.
You just touched on system. Whitey, you said they've identified, you know, the problem, but they can't fix it, which in my sort of the way I sort of take that, that's a bit of personnel. So, Rammer, you're the last one left here, and you're the Bombers man. Is it system or is it personnel? So do they need to do, I'll use example, do they need to just completely commit to a system over the next summer and come out and just go, that's Essendon? Or do they need to do like a bit like Port Adelaide where make some really tough calls and let's just start committing to the draft?
No, I don't think they need to commit to the draft. I actually think the players are the majority of players there. I think there's a couple of personnel changes that they need. There's a lot of what I see comes down to just lacking in a couple of key areas. They've lacked that key midfielder now for a period of time. And that'll come. I think that they've been trying to find that, and that'll come. But the system part's interesting. I've always thought Essendon's best system is attack, is running attack and use with flair, because that's the type of player that they have. They have that type of player, but Half just said it, this fallback system that they're working on at the moment, they're getting themselves trapped. They're getting themselves too deep in the ground. They're trapped, and then when they try to attack, they're too deep. They're too deep in the field to start to move the ball, Jim. So I just think, I haven't really answered the question, to be honest with you, because I think it's probably...
No.
I actually think it's a bit of both.
No,
I
felt like you answered, we've got the players, we just need to work on our system. What do you got a different... different point of view? Do you think
I'm a bit like Rammer. I think there's multiple problems. I firmly believe that Essendon don't play the right way, but they got criticised by being too offensive a couple of years ago. So I think they've overcorrected in a lot of ways. But my
plan,
criticism, cool. Well, and that's the biggest concern of all, is that this is the new plan that, as Dylan Shield tells us, well, it's going to take some time to bed down. My biggest issue with Essendon, Jimmy, is the lack of leadership out on the field. When things are going wrong, not enough Essendon players stand up and say, you know what, we're not going to accept this. We're actually going to stand up collectively, but as a leadership group, to make sure this game doesn't get away from us. And in my view now, you know, Rammer played in a premiership team. Jimmy, you played in many premiership teams. And the reality is good teams have a core group of leaders that stand up and are consistent performers week in, week out. And Essendon, really, outside a couple, don't. And Zach Merritt's been Essendon's best player this year, and he's not in their leadership group this year. So, to me, it's a leadership issue, and it's an on-field leadership issue more than an off-field leadership issue.
I can't believe you didn't reference my 99 Antec Cup victory then. That was disappointing. That was very,
was that
very
in the special jumpers, that real weird hawk check jumper? Was that in
no, no, that was no, 96. No, no, that was 96.
No, no. It was still a weird jumper.
That was a lightning premiership.
Had a hawk on it with a big eye.
Yeah, it was an unusual system they were running that year, but a successful system.
Is there anything there, Rammer, that I said that's unacceptable?
I agree with that. There's one thing I just want to make mention. If you look at the performance of Essendon with their season on the line and the Bulldogs with their season on their line, you can't even compare those two performances last night. It's impossible. Like, the Bulldogs were desperate, and we'll talk about them, I'm sure, after the break. Desperate, hungry, want, but Essendon, nah. They're just, they looked beaten before they even walked out yesterday.
Well, they were late
to the Bulldogs,
game.
Yeah, but the Bulldogs in that game, Rammer, they didn't play as well as they could have. They did a lot wrong, but in the clinches, their good players stood up for them. Now, Marcus Fontapelli's been questioned as a leader, and I still can't get my head around that. He was inspirational there last night for the Dogs, and it wasn't just the goal he kicked. It was other things he did as well. Lockie Hunter, Jackson McRae. There had a number of players that stood up for them in the clinches and just willed them over the line in the end when it looked like they weren't going to win.
Yeah, a different scenario. I mean, they were Essendon were never in that. Geelong absolutely never. Absolutely brained them. So no, whilst it's, you know, in the clinches, when you talk about when you need players to stand up, there was no clinch in the game yesterday with Geelong, Geelong and Essendon.
Yeah, but Harf, I'm not talking about Essendon just yesterday. I'm talking about Essendon in general. That's where their issues are. So, look, you know, they were obliterated in the first quarter, Essendon, and they were never coming back from there. But some of it's actually in the standards that are set to make sure that that sort of situation, when your season on the line, doesn't actually take place in the first place.
The Cats are firing, is what we know, Jim. And you've been on them for a while now. I'm still thinking that the Tigers are premiership favourites.
Seems to have hurt himself in the last seconds of the game. A game won by St Kilda, but it was a fight of all four rounds. A bit of pain for young Nick Caulfield. But the Saints and Brett Ratner get themselves together back on the winner's list.
14 points was the margin for the Saints yesterday. A fantastic win over the Hawks and much needed as well. And Dean Kemp was a big part of it from the security perspective, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club this morning. G'day, Dean.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are terrific. Thank you, pal. Thank you for getting up early after a game and having a chat to us. Just as a bit of a as an aside, what sort of times are you getting up these days in Hubville?
The family come up on the second flight, so the little fella was up at 6 this morning, so... Yeah, there's no sleepings for me anymore, but it's all worth it.
How much of a difference has that made for you and your experience, and for everyone, not just you, but you obviously can speak on your behalf, with the families being there and having some sense of normality and family around you?
Yeah, with the kind of when we first obviously got told that we were coming up, it was for a month, and then it was a little bit unpredictable, and obviously we're up here for the rest of the season, so. Yeah, luckily enough, the AFL put on a charter flight and were able to send up some families, which was great. So we had about 50 kind of come up on that flight, including mine, and then we've got another 40-odd coming in 10 days. So I think there's going to be about 150 Saints people here. But, it's amazing, really. It kind of changes. It makes it feel a bit like home and can kind of take your brain off footy a bit as well, which is good.
Yeah, fantastic. That's a great thing. Another 40 to come. They're coming from everywhere.
Yeah. All of a sudden, there's all these families coming from everywhere, so that'll be good. I'll be up here for a couple of weeks, and hopefully can be on the journey with us and see where it takes us.
Well, the journey's looking a bit more exciting after that win yesterday. It was a critical performance for you guys to win in terms of what it might mean going forward and how tight the race is for the eight at the moment. Was there a build-up in terms of that from Rats and the coaching staff about the importance of the game, or was it just, let's just go out and focus on beating the Hawks?
Yeah, we did focus and talk about that. We had a couple of things to play for, so it was obviously our captain to run this game as well, and he's the heart and soul of the club and has done amazing things for this club. So, yeah, we kind of had to play for him, and then Rats did speak about what it meant for us as a group and where we want to head. It was kind of a talking point and a little spur on to get us going. And, it was good to get the result.
Yeah, Dean, it was one of those games where you just had to win, obviously, yesterday. However you won really didn't matter. But Alistair Clarkson made a few comments after the game saying you guys played a more defensive game, albeit you still scored 80 points within the game. Did you slightly change the way you went about it? Because we're so used to now seeing you as this, you know, attacking, free-flowing team. But, you know, yesterday at times you folded back and you possessed the football. You had a lot of marks. Was that on purpose or was that just the way the game played out?
Yeah, it was kind of the way the game played out. But us as a team, we kind of have, you know, three or four gears that we can go to and that we want to try and play to. But I reckon this season is all about momentum. So if teams are getting momentum, it's kind of how fast we can shift to maintain the ball and keep them off it, because the longer we have it, obviously the Oppo can't score or get it back. So, yeah, we kind of focused on that as a whole group this year to make sure we kind of work through our gears and can play all different types of tempo. Obviously, when we want to score, we want to try and go balls out. But, yeah, it was good to see the young guys kind of step up and control that gears mentality and yeah, get the win and control the ball.
Well, you had to shift pretty quickly because, it was five goals that Hawthorn were able to kick in that first quarter. So what was the message then at quarter time from Brett Ratten? Was it, okay, was it let's lift the tempo? Because you only did kick another goal in that second quarter. Or was it, okay, here's what Hawthorn are doing. Here's how we slightly need to change our game.
Yeah, we looked at the first quarter at the quarter break and we're down contested ball and we thought that there was kind of they were beating stuff around the ball and winning that contested footy and getting it their way. So we put our backs under enormous heat and obviously couldn't quite stem the flow with them kicking goals. But yeah, we kind of changed that focus at quarter time and made sure we got our hands on the ball early and got the momentum going forward. And we scored at different times and different roles. A few guys taking marks and guys kicking it on the run. So, yeah, we were able to hit the scoreboard in different ways. But, we spoke about contested ball at quarter time and the mids got that done. And as the game went on, we thought we matched them, if not beat them, in that contested footy. So that was good.
To give his dogs back the lead, that should feed back. It feeds back. Hasn't got the carry. What's the call?
Thank you.
Oh, it's been called a goal. The goal stands. Insufficient evidence to overturn it.
Fair to say there's a bit of drama last night in the clash between the Western Bulldogs and the West Coast Eagles at the Metricon Stadium. In the end, it was the Doggies by 2 points in a seesawing battle in the last quarter. It was very entertaining. And that millimetre decision, effectively, in the goal line, got the Dogs over the line. I reckon Tom Liberatore might have been jumping for joy when that went through. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Going all right, buddy. What did you think when you saw the replay on the screen there at Metricon about that decision?
Nah, it was definitely a goal. I think it was. No doubt.
Well, it was a good result. How important is that for the season, do you think, for you guys?
Yeah, obviously, critical. You think we need to win every game. So, yeah, from now on in, it's just pretty much elimination, I guess.
So after the first quarter, where things were a little bit shaky against the Eagles and things weren't going your way, how did you get it back on your terms? It was 4-0 at quarter time. How did you get it back?
Well, I think at quarter time, we weren't really that stressed around the scoreboard. We had most of the play, I guess. They had a couple out the back where we had a couple of key mistakes that cost us goals. So I think what we were doing was pretty good. We just needed to add a bit of polish with the ball and composure going forward. And just keep that four half pressure on and the game will turn. So we just stay patient and it turned out right eventually.
I want to ask you about Tim English, Tom. I mean, he's an interesting footballer because he can do pretty much everything and he's still so young. Some of the things that he did late in the game must give that group a lot of confidence.
Yeah, he's been a massive part of our year this year, especially in key wins. And his ability to go forward the last couple of weeks too has been extremely beneficial for the way we play and our ball movement, that kind of stuff. And how he works through the stoppers, but last night he went to another level. His strength and then his running capacity to get from contest to contest is pretty good. And he's a big boy too, and he can bench about 140 too. So he's a strong man as well.
We talked to Luke Beveridge about him probably about a couple of months ago. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him because when he plays well, you guys play well. Talk to us a little bit about him as a person, because it did feel at three-quarter time that he almost, along with Marcus and a few of the others, really lifted you over the line. He had this look in him that he was going to do something special in that last quarter, but he seems a quiet kid.
Yeah, he's, he's pretty quiet. He's pretty reserved in his own way. But when you want him up, get him going, he's hard to show him up. So he's pretty smart. a bit cheeky too. He's quite a funny fella. So I think once you just sort of get him going a bit, and he's hard to stop, as you saw in the last quarter.
Hey, Libba, how does a man like you enjoy hub life? If the club said to you next year you have to go into a hub again and play your football up in Queensland for another year, how would that go for you?
Surprisingly, it wouldn't be as bad as what I would have thought initially. But it's been pretty good. I've got a family up here, so it's been keeping me pretty busy. It's actually gone very quickly. And we've pretty well looked after, mate, so I'm not going to complain again if I get my washing and food cooked for me every day.
Do you like the fact that you have to see your teammates sort of every day?
There are times where you want your quiet time, where you want your own space, whatever. But on the whole, it's been pretty good. After a loss, you try and hide a bit more, but on the whole, it's been really good. Opportunity to sort of, I suppose, grow as teammates off the field as well. So it's been good.
And the last quarter, does that position you well? I mean, you've played in a lot of big games yourself, of course, through your career and a couple of years ago with the Premiership and how you got to that point. Do you really feel alive when you've got those situations at play where there's goal for goal and it's seesawing leads and you've got to find a way in the end? Are they the moments you live for as a player these days?
Yes, we were saying that last night, actually. A few of the boys were talking about that after the game, how they're the, especially this time of year as well, where it's games pretty much do or die. So, there's certainly those, even last week against Geelong, I don't really get over the line, but those last 2 weeks have been pretty exciting games to be a part of, for sure.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.